that he's been doing with respect to mercury distribution and their relationship in lake sediments. So.
Thank you, Tom. So we're going to talk about the neighboring state of South Dakota and TMDL, or total maximum daily load for mercury fish tissue consumption advisories. So this, I'm responsible for developing the South Dakota TMDL as mandated by EPA 303D requirements, and we really have no data in our state of where that mercury is coming from for the fish that we're catching and finding mercury in it. And so I developed a plan to look at water quality, fish tissue, watershed, land use data, and then look at atmospheric fluxes or deposition of mercury from our surrounding airshed, and then look at historical mercury sediment loading that's occurring in our lakes and impoundments. And then the second phase is to actually develop a TMDL with this information. And so mercury typically comes from, at least in South Dakota and our region, is coming from emissions from coal-fired power plants. We have a lot of coal-fired power plants in our airshed. South Dakota doesn't look that green, except perhaps in the Black Hills, but it's coming from that area. It is either elemental mercury, reactive gaseous mercury, or particulate mercury, and then it's going to fall, depending on what type of climatic system you have, as either dry deposition and or wet deposition with the rain and snow. Then, depending on what the watershed characteristics look like, it's going to move through that watershed, depending on how forested or what type of land use is in there, and end up in the low points in the watershed. And so in the lakes and impoundments, it can get incorporated into the sediments, but it can also be methylated or be a source of methylmercury, which then can move up the food chain. And what I'm going to talk about today is our deposition results for our region, and then talk about the sediment results. So we have currently 47 lakes and impoundments that exceed the EPA and FDA fish tissue consumption advisories of 3 parts per million. Actually, the current level in South Dakota is 1 ppm, but that's going to be reduced here in the next year or two. Most of those are located up in the northeastern part in the Glacial Lakes region, but there is a distribution throughout the state in this area. Now, if we look at our airshed, we like to think that our airshed is nice and pristine, but there is a significant amount of activity, proposed, active, and pending, and under construction, coal-fired power plants in our region. The predominant source of this, or development, is in northeastern Wyoming and southeastern Montana in the Powder River Basin. And so there's estimates that if the current mercury emission, or lack thereof, emission removal requirements stay as is, there will be an additional 1,500 pounds of mercury per year that's going to be emitted from these new plants that are coming online. And so this is within a 300-kilometer radius of Badlands National Park, located in central South Dakota. So what we've done with funding from the National Park Service and from the South Dakota DENR is develop some passive bulk mercury deposition samplers. So these were constructed at my institution and deployed within our region. We have 9 sites. We are not part of the MDN, or National Deposition Network, and so we had to go a different route to get this, get these constructed. This has been done by Carl Watrous in Wisconsin for several smaller studies, and done in Sweden. And so essentially everything that lands up on the top of this funnel is collected. We analyze this bottle here once a month and get a total mercury deposition that's occurring in this area on a monthly basis. And so these sites have been deployed at 9 locations, including up here at Roosevelt National Park up in North Dakota, Devil's Tower. We're down at Scotts Bluff National Monument, and then 7 sites in South Dakota at various national parks and South Dakota State University Ag Extension Centers. And so these have been running a maximum of about 1 year, so we have a limited data set, but we do have some interesting results. After 1 year, we're finding some hot spots and cold spots with mercury deposition. And so if you look up in this region, this Tom talked about this in the last talk, so at Roosevelt National Park is our peak deposition. At 15, almost 16 nanograms per liter in the water. We've also got these results correlated to micrograms per square meter per day as well. And these actually correlate quite nicely with the MDN deposition sites that are located here in Minnesota and Iowa. And actually, this value correlates quite nicely with those current results. And the predominant, again, the winds are coming out of the west to northwest. The power plants are located in this region and over towards Gillette, Wyoming. And so this is where we're getting most of our deposition occurring. And this could perhaps explain some of the elevated mercury in Tom's region up there in North Dakota in the soils. So next, I want to talk about the sediment sampling. So that mercury deposition was one phase. The sediment sampling is the next one. We wanted to go out and kind of get an idea of what's in our sediments and some of our lakes and impoundments in this area. Didn't have the time or the budget to sample all the lakes and impoundments, so we had to be a little selective. We chose 11 lakes and impoundments that have a 15-foot maximum depth. That was a pretty strong criteria. We don't have many lakes that are that deep, but we wanted to minimize the wind movement or patterns of moving that, which would prevent us from dating the sediment to see how old that is. Wanted to find some current and plus or minus the 1 milligram per kilogram mercury advisory limits, geographic distribution. So we picked three lakes up in this area, central, southeastern part, and then a distribution of lakes and natural lakes and impoundments in this area. So for the methods, this was an expedition. Tom was in this one as well, and we went out and collected sediment cores in January, February last of this year. Collected three cores at each of the lakes, up to 100 centimeters or whatever was the maximum recovery at that. Took slices between 1 and 5 centimeters, depending on the resolution that we needed for that particular thing we were analyzing for. Did a total metals, mercury, loss of ignition, carbon, doing some radio dating, lead-210 and cesium-137 dating with that, and water content. So we have correlations between the three cores and match the data together. So what I want to do is kind of paint a picture of the findings that we have for our lakes and advisories for the non-advisory and compare that signature to the advisory lakes that we have. This would be the current mercury consumption advisories. So this is Lake Sinai that's located in eastern South Dakota. And what we have on here is depth on this left axis up here in the top, total sulfur, total mercury in milligrams per gram, and then we got total mercury, nanograms per gram, and carbon at milligrams per liter. And so some interesting findings that we have on here. So our mercury concentrations range between 50 and about 80 nanograms per gram. And so that's relative background concentration, not too high, as based upon some literature studies I've been looking at. Second trend for our non-advisory lakes is a relatively high total sulfur. And so typically above 6 milligrams per gram, and that suggests that there perhaps is inhibition of the methylmercury production, perhaps by the sulfur-reducing bacteria that are responsible for that methylmercury production. There appears to be H2S production, and perhaps that's inhibiting the SRB activities. And then there's a limited stock or reservoir of mercury for that methylmercury production to occur. Now compare this to our mercury advisory lakes, and this has a much different signature with this one. This is Lake Isabel, also located in, central South Dakota, and this one has a very high mercury concentration, up to 280 nanograms per gram in the sediments in this area, and it's also located in the top 10 centimeters of that core. And so that's the most bioavailable, most biologically active region there, and that concentration does decrease as we go down this core, but quite high concentration. This is one of the highest ones, but this is common for all of our mercury advisory lakes that we've sampled. Second, a relatively low sulfur concentration, so it's consistently less than 5 milligrams per gram, and that suggests that the sulfate-reducing bacteria activities are quite prevalent and effectively reducing or producing sulfide in that process. There's also a large stock of mercury that can be used for that SRB activities in that area. Also looking at the total iron, so I didn't discuss this on the previous one, but relatively high iron concentration. The stores of iron reduction or biological iron reduction is also a source of methylmercury production. The dissimulatory iron reducing bacteria can do that, although that concentration is quite high. We do see it decreasing here, but it appears that there is some activities with the iron reducing bacteria. And then lastly, the carbon concentration. We have relatively depleted carbon stores. Our non-advisory lakes have between 50 and 100 milligrams per gram. Here we're at much less than 50 milligrams per gram. And so organic carbon appears to be an effective electron donor for this methylmercury production in this process. And there's also a benefit. There's limiting binding capacity. Well, actually, this is a bad thing. Limited binding capacity of methylmercury that's been produced. It can go free into the water body or water up into the water column above these sediments. Some other interesting data that we have, we wanted to find out, is this coming from our watershed or is this from some sort of mining or natural geologic activity there? Plotting the total mercury to aluminum ratio. Aluminum is going to be erosive processes that are coming off of that watershed. These profiles actually line up quite nicely here, and so that suggests that indeed it is coming from that watershed and not from an internal source in this area. A couple last findings that we have on here. Wanted to look at some relations between mercury fish tissue and the watershed. Here I've got plotted catchment area to lake area, acre per acre, for our no mercury advisory and our mercury advisory. And so we have a much higher number. So when this number is higher, that means that watershed is much, much greater compared to that lake area that's down in this area. So it concentrates that flow into a much smaller area in the sediments. And so we've got greater, perhaps, organic carbon burial and greater mercury transport or magnifying that mercury signal in that watershed for our mercury advisory lakes. Last piece of data that I just got here right before I flew out here from my grad student, so was looking at the land use. And so we went on to GIS, looked at the different types of land use attributes associated with the top 10 centimeters of the mercury found in the sediments in this area. This is a limited data set, but there are some telling stories that are here that I'm still struggling to figure out or haven't thought too much about what this means yet. But we have cultivated crops that are in the blue, and we see a trend that R-squared is not too bad for this type of data, trend going down. So as we get more mercury in the sediments, we're getting less degree or less area of cultivated crops that are in this watershed. Contrary to this is the grasslands, herbaceous lands, and we're getting, as we get more mercury in this part of our sediments, top 10 centimeters, we're getting a much higher degree of grasslands or much in our area. So it appears that there's perhaps these cultivated crops are being cultivated and actually storing the mercury in there and minimizing the erosion processes, or perhaps the erosion from the grasslands has more dissolved organic carbon that's facilitating the movement of this mercury within this watershed, and perhaps it's resulting in greater concentrations in our sediments. So this is still a work in progress. My grad student sprung this up on me like right before I'm leaving, so I got the time to think about it on the airplane, but just some very interesting findings. So with that, in summary, so it appears that our source of mercury is coming from atmospheric deposition. Our sediment profiles for our mercury advisory lakes, current advisory, we're going to have a lot more once that level drops down to 3 ppm. Typically elevated total mercury, low sulfur concentrations, the sulfate reducing bacteria activities are quite prevalent. Low carbon and also low loss of ignition in this area, and this is has reduced mercury complexation capacity, and there's sufficient electron donor availability for that sulfate reducing bacteria activities to methylate that mercury. In our watershed, we're getting some magnification because of these catchment area, the lake area areas. And then we have the grasslands, which is very common in South Dakota in these watersheds, appear to have the highest sediment mercury loading compared to the cultivated crops. So with that, we're the next phase is kind of taking this data, looking at it from a different perspective and coming up with some criteria for the TMDL that we're going to implement here by 2011 in South Dakota. So with that, I'll be around here this day, and I appreciate your attention and be happy to answer any questions that you might have if there's time.
Do you have any questions for Jim?
Right, so could the land use thing be more related to the area? correlation to the lead deposition, historical lead deposition, is all based on leaf area index and the amount of dry deposition.
Yeah, if we had leaves, we would.
Well, I mean, grass has certainly.
Oh, good. All right. It could. I think that's an attribute we can pull off a GIS and look at that relative index. But yeah, these are all mainly prairie areas that and.
There's still really vast differences.
Okay.
Between a farmland and a grassland, for example, and a leaf area.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's an excellent suggestion. We'll take that into account and see. Maybe there's literature with that too. And maybe these results can help explain some of Tom's findings, at least with our elevated. Mercury deposition we're getting up in Roosevelt National Park coming from that area. So it's interesting.
Any further questions? Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Yep.